you going to vote for that?
Yes.
Bill for introduction. No one shown on the agenda. It was Representative Riebel's bill, as I recall. Representative Riebel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this bill was structured to cut off the per diem for the legislative or the legislators effective July 15th, 1981. The purpose behind the bill, pretty simple. It seems to me that the legislative session has been dragging on, and it seems also that we have been presented almost every kind of a figure that anybody would ever need to make some decisions on. And it also seems to me that somebody should be given a little help to come to some conclusions as to what we should do in the way of decision making so we can get out of here. I tried to take a responsible position on this by going to a few people and chatting about how long it would take us to get out of here if, in fact, today that the revenue questions were answered. And several said that they thought that if the committees were shut down and we cranked this thing up, that we could get out of here in 10 days. And therefore, that's why I chose the 15th of July. I think that as of Wednesday night, a week from Wednesday night, that we could do a responsible job and shut down the legislature, and I think that's appropriate to do that. I know some people have come at me and they say, yeah, it's easy for you to say because you're from Salem and therefore you aren't cutting yours off. You know, that's fine if that's the position people want to take. It doesn't bother me that much because I just really think that we have to stimulate somebody to get down and wind this thing down. So that's the purpose of the bill.
Move for introduction as a Ways and Means bill. Discussion of the motion.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I wonder if the representative that's proposing this would like to limit it to the House of Representatives, because that seems to be where the delay is. And as my memory serves me, the Ways and Means Committee co-chairman advised the subcommittee chairman that they wanted all the bills out by the 1st of June. I don't think any subcommittee was later than maybe 2 or 3 days beyond that deadline. That means that these bills have been on file because of the negotiations in the House of Representatives for the last month and 6 days. And I think if there's anyone that needs maybe some gentle reminding of some way to get the legislature to come to a conclusion for this session, it would be the House of Representatives, and I'd like to see it limited to that body.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think
under discussion of the motion.
I think we could add to this the governor of the state of Oregon, in his wisdom, and I think quite properly, presented the legislature with a budget. Unfortunately, that budget, for the first time in the memory of most legislators, was an unbalanced budget. It required additional revenue measures. And I think in parallel to what the senator just said, in order to balance that governor's budget, we had to pass revenue measures, and they've never come out of the House Revenue Committee. Therefore, the Senate couldn't do anything about it. So I think it's quite appropriate. If you really feel that somebody's not doing their duty and therefore ought to have their pay cut off, then maybe in the measure of things, the only place that indecision lies is in the House of Representatives. So cut off theirs if you really think it's appropriate.
Is there further discussion? I have a question I'd like to ask.
Certainly.
It's about psychology. Do you think people work better or just get stubborn when you give them I'm going to cut your pay deadline?
Well, in answer to you, everything we've done up to this point hasn't worked, and so I think that it's appropriate that we might try a little different twist.
You want to watch the Ways and Means Committee has been ready for a little time now.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
which you're a part of, Representative Reba.
I fully understand that.
Now, just a second. I'm going to ask another question. Did you consider any other alternatives? Was there another alternative that you might have had in mind besides this one? Okay.
This is the only one.
Right. I'm personally reducing my staff and will terminate them well before that time. That's kind of a backwoods approach. If I'll still be here and I'll still be doing it, but I'm going to cut the cost of my office way, way down at more than $44
a day. This one's 15 days. We'll be sitting on just make it.
Mr. Chairman,
under second round discussion.
Mr. Chairman, if it's in order, I would move that the proposed bill for introduction be amended on line 2, strike the word legislators and insert state representatives, and then the rest of the proposal would stand. That's my motion, Mr. Chairman.
I believe this came from a subcommittee.
That's right.
I'd like Senator Potts' view on that question.
Mr. Chairman, if you'd ask my view on it, this is, I think he's asked in good faith for a bill to be introduced. I think we should follow the procedure we've always followed. If this committee feels it should be introduced, it should be assigned to a subcommittee for further study. I think that's the procedure we should follow.
I'm uncertain about the ground for my ruling, Senator Burbidge, but since the motion is to introduce a bill, I don't believe it is before us so that an amendment could be made. It would have to be introduced, printed, and returned to the committee before I believe it would be appropriate for an amendment to be made.
Mr. Chairman,
you could introduce a separate bill or make a motion to introduce a separate bill, but I don't think we could amend a bill which is before us for introduction only.
Well, Mr. Chairman, on the motion, I regret your ruling because I would like to get this proposal in shape that I could support it.
I understand.
The way it is now, I can't support it. I don't believe that my colleagues in the Senate have contributed in any way to what the justification is outlined by the proposer. And I just, in good conscience and faith to representation of the Senate, couldn't possibly vote for the introduction of this measure this way.
I guess that's where we are. further discussion of Representative Riebel's motion. Call the roll on Representative Riebel's motion.
Representatives Katz.
No.
Cherry.
No.
Lindquist. Simpson.
Aye.
Van Vliet.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Riebel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Senators Burbidge.
No.
Potts.
Aye.
Ripper.
Count's getting awful close, isn't it? If I can amend it later, I'll go vote aye. Yeah.
No, we get that.
Roberts votes no.
Gardner.
Aye.
Presiding Chairman.
No.
What is it?
7-aye.
That's insufficient. I vote to introduce a bill, and the motion has failed. The next item on the agenda is the Legislative Assembly. Do you want to put on an agenda item later, one that is limited to the group, still discussing matters in secret, you may. The Legislative Assembly budget, which is a supplemental appropriation, House Bill 5067, Representative Simpson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 5067 originally was intended to provide the interim appropriation for the 61st Legislative Assembly and the startup appropriation for the 62nd Legislative Assembly. The measure, however, has been amended to provide only for the supplemental costs of the 61st Legislative Assembly, with a separate measure introduced to provide for the original intent of House Bill 5067. The $411,583 will provide funds for an additional
15 calendar days of session costs, which will fund the assembly through July the 20th, 1981. The additional days are budgeted at $27,439 a day, as opposed to the overall average for 190 days of $29,814. The reduction is due to initial printing and supply costs, which are unique to the earlier stages of the session. Mr. Chairman, with the an additional 5 days as the bill for introduction that Representative Riebel talked about, this would be an additional 5 days over that, ending on July the 20th, 1981. I guess you could say there was a 10% reduction in this, but actually it isn't just due to the printing and supplies that we've already taken care of in the earlier days of the session. I guess this bill would further hint to those of us who are sensitive to the costs, would further hint that perhaps we've been here a few days too long. But Mr. Chairman, in order to meet the expenses of the Legislative Assembly for the additional days, I would move that that this bill be passed.
We'll be done.
Discussion of the motion that House Bill 5067 as amended on the printed agenda be reported out to the floor of the House with the recommendation of this committee that it do pass amended. Representative Riebel.
Mr. Chairman, obviously with the addition of the 5 days, it would be impossible for me to support this particular bill simply because I think if we had amended it so that we would have restricted the legislative per diem, that we would have saved ourselves about $30,000 a day for 5 days. And so I really don't believe I can support this.
90. $3,960 a day, not $30,000 for the per diem.
$3,960. Well, Mr. Chairman, can I answer you that?
Oh, surely.
What I was saying was is that if you just buy the fact that per diem is going to run out, that's one thing. But it was my feeling that there'd be an inclination to curtail the full legislative session. Therefore, I think that it's appropriate to talk in terms of some $29,000 to $30,000 a day.
I appreciate what you're saying. I would just comment as a friend that I'm not here for $44 a day, and Al, I'm pretty sure you personally are not in the legislature to get the $44 either. Is there further discussion of the motion 5067? Call the roll.
Representatives Katz.
Aye.
Cherry.
Aye.
Lindquist.
Aye.
Simpson.
Aye.
Van Vliet.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Riebel.
No.
Gilmore.
No.
Senators Burbidge.
Aye.
Potts.
Aye.
Ripper.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Presiding Chairman.
No. It is adopted. With regard to the Ethics Commission budget, that budget is before us. I've seen editorials on all different sides of concerning the facts of what's going on. I just wanted to make it clear that the Ethics Commission budget is before us. I would not want to force a vote by a committee such as this, and therefore am very chary of bringing a motion now, but I would move that that budget be placed on the next full agenda of the Ways and Means Committee. Is there objection to that motion for it to be regularly on the next full committee's agenda?
I object.
There is objection. The chair's motion is that it be on the next agenda by committee vote.
You object to that? You object to put it on the next committee agenda?
No.
Do you?
No.
All right. Call the roll.
Representatives Katz.
Aye.
Cherry.
Aye.
Lindquist. Simpson.
Aye.
Van Vliet.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Riebel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Senators Burbidge.
No.
Potts.
Aye.
Ripper.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Senator Thorne.
I'll vote aye also. Thank you.
Presiding Chairman.
Aye. The motion is adopted. It wouldn't be a suspension of the rules. It would be a simple vote.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to explain my vote.
Sure.
When that matter was before the full committee before, and I made some comments with the substance of which was rather severe criticism of the Ethics Commission because of some of their methods that I object to. I, since that time, have received a letter from the administrator of the Ethics Commission, and I note that there was copies provided all the members of the Full Ways and Means Committee. My analysis of the explanation that was sent by Ms. Reynolds was data of caseload background, and really a very flimsy kind of an excuse for the matters that I criticized that still I think are begging the question of what the future of that Ethics Commission is going to be. And until there is some kind of absolute guarantee that their future reports aren't going to be turned over to the press before they're turned over to the Ethics Commission itself, I'm not going to be able to vote to supply funds for a grandstanding operation, and that's as short as the way I perceive the Ethics Commission's behavior.
I received that letter before the budget was finally out of full committee, unless there's a second letter.
Well, I'll supply you then a copy of the one I'm referring to, Senator Fahey. It was the one that came on the heels of my criticism.
Right, I guess I just haven't gotten that one yet. Is there any further vote explanation or anything of that kind? Is there an announcement? We're about to adjourn this meeting. Is there an announcement?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there will be a meeting of the Salary Subcommittee at 8:30.
Senator Thorne.
Subcommittee 2 has a bill or 2 to wrap up, and we'll meet after this meeting for that.
Mr. Chairman, Capital Construction will meet at 8:30.
Any further announcement? For adjournment.
have the information on the total debt service and would like to have the that information for this reason, that there are some people in the legislature, not on this committee, that looked at this item and wondered why we were building more buildings. And I simply want those people not on this committee to understand what this appropriation is. I knew the answers to those questions. I wanted them on the record, and I wanted to have the information for myself to pass along to others.
Okay, are you done now, Senator Meeker?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Van Vliet.
I'd like to ask Bill a question. Does the state of Oregon own these buildings when we do the building on this? We have joint ownership with the local community, or do we own these buildings outright?
My understanding is that the buildings will be owned by the community college district.
What was the significance of the building?
Senator Ripper?
I think you might be due a little more explanation than that. We had, as you all know, the agreement was years ago when the community college started that you would get so many buildings based on your FTE, and that would become an obligation to the state. They did, as Dr. Cherry said, they went out and built buildings, and we had what we called an unmet obligation, and it's kept getting bigger and bigger, and it got up to $60 or $70 million, I think, before. And then 4 years ago, we said, we can't go on because it just continues to grow bigger and bigger and bigger, and you would have $100 or a couple hundred million. So we bought them off, and we are now paying that off. And then we said, from now on, every school would be on an individual basis, that there would no longer be an obligation, and it would go by campus, the same as we do in higher education. And so this is your debt service. You'll see in the next bill the debt service for higher education, which is about $10 million.
Except the state of Oregon owns those buildings.
No, they own it. Except in a sense, we probably have as much ownership in community colleges as we have in the University of Oregon's buildings, too. If we ever tried to touch them, you'd find out who had title or not. And I think it's the same as the Eugene that would be up in the air saying, oh, it's Corvallis. If you don't own those, they belong here. So it's the same sort of thing. It was just the obligation that we said, this is to pay it off. We're now on a pay-as-you-go basis.
Thank you very much. Bill, will you call a roll, please?
Senator Burbidge.
Aye.
Potts.
Aye.
Ripper.
Aye.
Meeker.
Aye.
Thorne.
39.
Aye.
Roberts.
Total is.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Katz.
Aye.
Cherry.
Aye.
39. Simpson.
Aye.
Van Vliet.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Riebel.
Aye.
Presiding Chairman.
Aye. House Bill 5029, the Department of Education Debt Service, Community College Construction. Will report to the House floor, do pass as amended. House Bill 5061, the State Military Department Capital Construction. Representative Cherry, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 5061 is an appropriation for capital construction for the State Military Department. The bill appropriates $9,000 from general fund for construction at Camp Rylea. It limits the other funds expenditure limitation to $1 for construction of the National Guard Military Museum, and it limits federal funds expenditures to $1 million for construction. In other words, we pay $9,000 and get $1 million from the government. The state share, $9,000 general fund money, will be used as part of the estimated cost of fencing. The bill was amended to authorize the State Military Department to sell a state-owned armory at Astoria. The section constitutes approval of the sale or other disposition of that armory property as required under ORS 396.515 parenthesis 4. In making this amendment, it was the committee's intent that the property would be sold and not otherwise disposed.
Is there any discussion on this budget this time? If not, Rick, would you call the roll, please?
Senators Burbidge.
Aye.
Potts.
Aye.
Ripper.
Aye.
Meeker.
Aye.
Thorne.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Fadley.
Aye.
Representatives Cass.
No.
Cherry.
Aye.
Simpson.
Aye.
Van Vliet.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Riebel.
Aye.
Presiding Chairman.
Aye. House Bill 5061, the State Military Department Capital Construction, will report to the House floor, do pass as amended. Senate Bill 5509, the Department of Higher Education's Capital Construction. Senator Gardner, please.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, the 1981-83 Capital Construction Bill for Department of Higher Education includes no general fund building program for higher education. Repeat, no general fund building program for higher education. The only general fund provided is $9 million to cover the 81-83 debt service for Article 11G bonds issued in previous biennial periods for debts already incurred, and that figure was reduced. We determined that the amount could be reduced from the originally scheduled amount in the governor's budget of $10.3 million to the $9 million. The bill also authorizes an extensive list of construction projects financed from gifts and grants and from auxiliary enterprise funds, including Article 11F1 bond borrowings. A major addition to University Hospital South is authorized. This will permit an addition to the hospital unit, adding more modern facilities and replacing obsolete facilities in the North unit. Also included are a series of remodeling projects in both the North and South hospital units and in several other buildings at the Health Sciences University. Part of these funds will be obtained from gifts and grants, mainly for the ophthalmology department, and the remainder will be financed with bond borrowings. This set of projects marks the long-planned major use of self-supporting bond borrowings to upgrade and expand the university hospital. The 81-83 hospital budget envisions the generation of revenues primarily from patient fees to cover debt service costs. General fund participation exists only through the indigent care allowances to the extent that those are available in the separate operating budget. Another item is the $19 million arena at the University of Oregon. This building will be built entirely from gifts and grants using Article 11F1 bonds to finance construction loans. The department has indicated that cash or pledges will be on hand before any part of that project is brought to the E-Board for approval for authority to proceed with construction. Similar financing methods have been used for other projects at both University of Oregon and OSU. The arena will be a large wood dome building which will seat 17,000 and will house basketball, wrestling, gymnastics, and other similar activities. The remaining projects are more routine. They include a parking structure addition to the Health Sciences University, construction of a swimming pool at OIT, student housing remodeling and additions at PSU, a list of remodeling and renovation projects at several institutions. Added to the list is a club building at Autzen Stadium being built entirely from gifts and grants at a cost of $660,000. This project is exempted from the customary E-Board release since the job is now being bid and quick action is required in order to have the facility ready.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Representative Katz?
I am fully aware that there are no general fund dollars. However, I think also that these requests don't face the reality of the times that we're in. It sounds like somebody's in another world planning and building, even if it's with bonds, gifts, grants, or contracts, or enterprise fees, and auxiliary enterprise fees, coming from a different world, not in touch with reality. And I have a great concern that because of the financial crisis that higher education finds itself, that it may not be able to repay or finance these projects with the fees that are levied on students or in the entire auxiliary enterprise system. And I wondered if the committee took that under consideration, that as we're shrinking everything, including the number of students, whether you are going to be able to repay those or have them operating self-supportingly.
Senator Gardner.
Yeah, I will respond to that, and perhaps Mr. Barrows, the chairman of the subcommittee, would like to respond further. We asked that several times and asked in a very pointed way Have you assumed, take the assumption that the full 10% cut will occur in higher ed, and you will lose your whatever number of students up to 6,000, how will that ripple through your cash flow for the for these particular items? And they assured us that they had done that cash flow analysis and that there would be sufficient demand to meet the debt service or other obligations on them. Now, some of these are not going to be affected by that. The ones that are being, where the front money only is coming from 11F, let's say, and then they're going to cover it with gifts and grants, the costs of it. Those are not really going to be affected in the same way that some of the others would be. So, for instance, the dormitory renovations or that, or the housing renovations, is huge. But they said they had conducted that analysis on the assumption that the 10% cut would occur, and they had determined that these still were needed and still could be sustained. I don't know if Representative Cherry wants to add anything to that, Chairman of the Committee.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I think Senator's remarks are excellent. You have to look at these one at a time, which we did. And there are other methods than using general funds for this. There's another check on it that before each one of these is ready to go, it will be okayed by, has to be okayed by the emergency board.
Thank you.
But I think that we have covered these pretty well.
Thank you. Senator Ripper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some problems. I think the same as Representative Katz. How are you going to explain swimming pools and tennis courts and all the rest of it? And then on top of that, you are borrowing money. And look at the amount of outstanding bonds right now under 11F is 84 million or almost 85 million. Their total capacity for loaning at this at December 1st in 1980 was 90 million. They're right up to the hill. Now, under the new capacity, they have $112 million. And now you're going to borrow right up to where that's the total amount. Now, whether you like it or not, that's an obligation of the state. It's just like somebody else asked a little while ago, whether they're 11F or 11G. If they don't pay, you go to the property tax, because that's the kind of bonds they are. And they're paid for out of auxiliary enterprises if you can raise that money. But the final analysis comes down that it's a state obligation because they're state bonds. And we're going right up to the very hill, right up to the very top of it. If you had some real needs, something really come up, you're going to be building tennis courts and swimming pools and parking structures. It's going to be awfully hard to explain this to somebody that can't get their kid into school and because we had to cut back or something else, and then they see swimming pools and all the rest of it going. I just don't think it's appropriate time to be doing that kind of building.
Sure. Senator Gardner, closing?
Yeah, 47.
Is he going to close?
Well, you want to speak now?
Yes.
Senator Roberts first, then.
I was on the subcommittee, and I voted for this. During the discussions, I expressed my own my reservations about it, and I still have them. And I must say that I was influenced by what I thought was the expert testimony in terms of the financial analysis. But I just say in passing, for instance, that the items that you see on page 2, for instance, which have reference to Portland State University housing, student housing expansion in particular, both of these items, you have to understand, are paid for by students, which means that it's going to cost these students more to live there because the total expenses here are going to be spread out in varying amounts over all the housing units that now exist in order to help finance additional housing units. And I think that's one of these kinds of costs that are imposed, just like raising student fees. The question that had to be faced by the committee on the basis of testimony given was, can you continue that housing without putting some money in to rehabilitate it? And don't you have to build some more housing to take the place of housing which is going to have to be eliminated because it's obsolete or because you meet student needs? So I had some strong reservations and asked
considerable questions about how much that was going to increase the cost. If I remember correctly, it was something in the order of $35 a month, sort of on an average of additional cost to students in order to pay for housing at Portland State. And I think that that's generally true throughout this. Another item here, the addition to the university hospital was justified on the basis it just had to have larger facilities and better facilities in order to attract patients, in order to pay for an operation there which was necessary to the teaching practices. So you're investing money, theoretically, in order to get enough patients in order to balance the budget with reference to that. But at the same time, you're adding a lot of beds right in the Portland area when the argument is Portland area is already overbuilt, and now they're building a new veterans hospital. So these are all the complications, and I have a lot of reservations about this, but I guess on the basis of the overall testimony before the committee, I voted for it, and I guess I'll vote for it today, but I sure have some reservations about it.
Thank you, Senator Roberts. Senator Gardner, in closing.
Yes, 47 of the $65 million is the hospital and the Dome Stadium. The Dome Stadium will be paid entirely by gifts and grants up front before construction begins. The University Hospital will be supported from patient fees and revenues, and the testimony was that's in the long-term interest of that complex to make it more self-supporting, more competitive in the hospital world, and that's where the guts of that money is, and these are going to be fully self-supporting, and passing, they'll probably create a few construction jobs I would say we need in this economy.
Mr. Chairman,
he closed.
Just one sentence.
Okay.
In the University Hospital, the prices will go up 1.5% to pay for this building.
Thank you. Call the roll, will you, please?
Senator Burbidge.
Aye.
Potts.
Aye.
Ripper.
No.
Meeker.
No.
Thorne.
Aye.
Robert.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Katz.
No.
Cherry.
Aye.
Simpson.
No.
Van Vliet.
Aye.
Jones.
No.
Riebel.
Aye.
Presiding Chairman.
Aye. Senate Bill 5509, the Department of Higher Education's capital construction, will report to the Senate. Do pass as amended. Non-budget bills and other related type items. Senate Bill 651. Senator Potts, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 651 is before you as amended. What this does requires the Workman's Compensation Board to pay claimants' travel expenses if the board selects a hearing location other than the county where the worker resides at the time of injury, or resides at the time of hearing if the worker must travel more than 50 miles. I'll explain that a little bit. We found that the president's law said now that they had to go to where the workman was injured. Sometimes when the time they get that taken care of, that workman has moved to some other area that have to move around. This is just a good, business way to do it. So that's where we made that. And it also it allows the board to employ any individual qualified by training and experience to serve as a referee on a temporary basis when the board determines that such employment is necessary in the conduct of the business of the hearings division. The individual appointed to serve as a referee on a temporary basis must meet the bar membership requirements. In addition, the board authorized to be expended in addition to the amount provided in the appropriation bill for the Workman's Compensation Board, an additional $141,176 to allow the board to hire two temporary referees and one temporary secretary to carry out the provisions of Section 2 of this bill. Be glad to answer any questions on it.
Thank you very much, Senator. Yeah, Senator Thorne, question?
I'm trying to catch up. Is this the bill that was going to centralize all hearings Salem rather than... There's a bill floating around that deals with a similar subject that would have...
That isn't this bill.
Is there any further discussion? If not, Rick, call the roll, please.
Senators Burbidge.
Aye.
Potts.
Aye.
Ripper.
Aye.
Meeker.
Aye.
Thorne.
No.
Roberts.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Fadley.
Aye.
Representatives Cherry.
Aye.
Simpson.
Aye.
Van Vliet.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Riebel.
Aye.
Presiding Chairman.
Representative Katz votes aye.
I vote aye.
Senate Bill 651 will report to the Senate due passed as amended. Senate Bill 658. Senator Potts, please.
Mr. Chairman, this Senate Bill 658 is a simple bill that instructs the Park and Recreation Division to include for financing for the Oregon State Museum of Natural History Building in its capital construction budget request for the 83-85 biennium and thereafter until the facility is completed. The Oregon State Museum of Natural History is to be located in the city of Eugene and will specialize in the display of natural history specimens and artifacts. Testimony before the committee indicated the cost of the building in today's dollars would be approximately $10 million. The 1979 legislature, you all recall, appropriated $175,000 to develop plans for the museum. All but $80,000 of that was eliminated by the special session. Senate Bill 658 extends the opportunity for additional planning funds if it becomes necessary to complete the museum plans during the 81-83 biennium. We had a great amount of concerned citizens from the city of Eugene who were up here, and they have sort of put their best foot forward to promote this and do a plan, and I think we'd be losing faith with them if we didn't stay in the ball game and play ball with them. And so I think that this is one facility that we would have to support.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Katz.
I have some concern about the language in Section 1 that directs the Parks and Recreation Division to request, starting this biennium and for each biennium thereafter until the facility is completed.
Mr. Chairman, the idea on that particular language was to allow the Parks Division to include it in their total capital construction list to rise or fall on the necessities of that capital construction list of the Parks Division each time. And that does not mean that that will be funded if that was not felt to be a high priority.
Mr. Chairman, I understand that. The thing is that doesn't even happen in higher education capital construction projects. Priorities change from biennium to biennium, and depending on what the needs are and the general fund availability, those change. So I'm a little concerned about tying the future legislative sessions to this kind of legislative language.
It just means it'll be on the priority list each time. It may be in different positions, but it'll be there.
That's right. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Simpson.
Senator Potts, was there any report given as to what really is still just in the planning stages? Has ground been broken or anything of that nature at all?
I don't know. I think Tony could probably speak to that.
I think Senator Failey can probably answer that better.
County and other shares are being slowly contributed. The road is in, the parking lot is being done, the workup of the ground, the drainage, the sewerage, all of those things are being completed. What has been done with the portion of the planning money that was finally retained, cut back from 175 to 80,000, is the architectural design and planning work, and they have made some real progress on that, as they should have, with $80,000. But it was not enough to complete it. But in turn, it's in a setting where there are two other major buildings and a good-sized parking lot. The access road, the sidewalks, the landscaping, the drainage, the sewerage, all of those are going forward for all three buildings.
Is there any further questions? If not, Rick, call a roll, please.
Senators Burbage.
Aye.
Potts.
Aye.
Ripper.
Kind of reluctant, aye.
Meeker.
No.
Thorne.
No.
Roberts.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Fadley.
Aye.
Representatives Katz.
No.
Cherry.
Aye.
Simpson.
No.
Van Vliet.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Riebel.
Aye.
Presiding Chairman.
Aye. Senate Bill 658, as amended, will report to the Senate floor due pass. House Bill 2628, Representative Jones.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I think it's 2682, but that's close enough. House Bill 2682, A gross as amended, requires the Department of State Police to provide certain criminal offender information on individuals to persons such as employers, the press, or agencies that request it. A person or agency can receive information on any convictions of an individual and any arrest less than 1 year old which have not been acquitted or dismissed. The individual about whom information is requested will be notified that such an inquiry has been made and will receive a copy of the information 14 days before it is to be provided to the requester. Individual will be informed of the procedure for challenging incorrect information and of the possibility of a civil rights law violation if the employer discriminates on the basis of arrest records alone. The department will inform the requester that the information is furnished on the basis of similarity of names and description and that identification of the individual whose record is requested is not confirmed by fingerprint. The department will adopt rules and provide access to criminal offender information and will establish a fee for responding to requests for information. The fee is expected to be $10 for the 1981-83 biennium. The committee amended the bill in two areas. The first makes it clear that the new procedure established in the bill will not interfere with or change the information exchange system currently used between the Oregon State Police and the criminal justice or law enforcement agencies. The Second Amendment deletes Section 8 of the bill, which would have prohibited law enforcement agencies from collecting or maintaining information about the political, religious, or social views of any individual or group unless the information is part of a criminal investigation and involves criminal conduct. The State Police will return to the Emergency Board for the required FDE and other fund limitation increase. I recommend passage of this, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Let me be correct. It is 2682. Is sure. It? Yes. Senator Gardner.
Yes. Carrier, or you, Mr. Chairman. Has this been through the House Judiciary Committee?
Yes.
It has. And this is a House bill, so it will go back to the Senate then?
Correct.
After passage and...
Yes.
Okay, fine.
Yes. Senator Burbidge.
What limitation is left as far as who has access then? If everybody in the Associated Oregon industry has got access to it, who's left out? The press has got access to it.
There is nobody left out, I don't think, Senator. Any individual or employer group or the press can request the information and simply for the benefit of the consuming public, and a good example would be Pacific Northwest Bell, if they have a prospective person to be hired as an employee, they should have a right to access to his record if he has any. Now, if he doesn't have a criminal record, then there will be nothing done and no report will be made. But their example was that if they would hire a criminal to service telephones, as an example, and give that person access to people's homes, and he did have a criminal record for robbery or rape or something of that nature, then that they would have not have known that before hiring the person. So the individual is protected because they're notified before the information is given out. You as an individual employer could request the information if you needed it before hiring the person. I think it's quite a simple request and a worthwhile one.
But I want to ask that question.
Yes, another question.
Am I reading this accurately when I interpret what I've read here to mean that the part that's available is the arrest record? Also, that the person may never have been convicted of any kind of a crime. That person may only have been arrested and there's an arrest record.
I think it's only convictions.
Well, I'm reading on line 39 of page 4. For purposes of this paragraph, the record of an arrest or the report of the crime includes but is not limited to, and it goes on and lists about nine more things of general information. And it speaks about an arrest record as well as a criminal record. A lot of people are arrested just the same way a lot of people are hailed before the Ethics Commission that may not be guilty.
I believe, Senator Burbidge, that's old language, and if you've been concerned about it
before... Well, but before it was protected. Now it won't be.
No further comments, Mr. Chairman, okay, unless they're asked for.
Yes.
Senator Gardner.
This is the same. I thought I recognized this bill. This is the same as the old Senate Bill 2, which we passed in the Senate last time, and it's basically a way of centralizing this information. You can go out to the counties and get it painstakingly, but this is a way of getting it more quickly. And that did pass the Senate last time, so...
That's right. I'm just raising some questions. Yes. I don't know how I am. I suppose I may support it when I'm totally informed on it after the bill's discussed on the Senate floor. I am a little concerned that for an employer to make a decision on whether or not a person ought to be hired is whether or not he got arrested by some zealous officer from Portland Police Department that rounded up a lot of